Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Time to talk some college football. We'll switch gears a bit.
Barton Simmons from CBS Sports, 24/7 Sports, did such a good job last week with you guys out when he was in here with
me.
We invited him back this week to talk a little college football. Barton, let's start. Let's get right into it. Alabama-LSU, it's the game everyone's going to be watching. 25 touchdowns to no interceptions for Tua so far this year. Is LSU's secondary good enough to affect this passing game at all? Because we haven't seen it yet with Bama.
Yeah, I mean, they're good enough to affect the passing game for sure. I think, look, I have been as big of a Tua guy as there is. I believe in him. I think he's the best player in college football. I think he'll be, you know, forget about the 6 foot stuff. He'll be a number one overall draft pick, I think. I think he's that good. And yet, when you look at what Alabama has played this year, they haven't played a good secondary yet. I actually wrote about this yesterday for CBS. I mean, there's not a, you could make a case for one DB all year that they've played who could maybe start in LSU's secondary. And that's I think, a commentary on both sides of it. I think, look, Alabama, if you look at S&P Plus, which is sort of the advanced analytics stuff, the average defensive secondary or the average passing defense that they played is 87th in the country. The best passing defense is 50th that they played, and that's Arkansas State. And this LSU unit is third in that same metric. And so when you look at what this LSU defensive backfield can do, you got Greedy Williams on one corner, Christian Fulton on the other, two future NFL guys. They're going to challenge Alabama's receivers at the line of scrimmage like they haven't seen yet. You watch the film of all these teams Alabama playing. None of these DBs are in these guys' faces. None of them are rerouting. None of them are challenging their releases. And it's because I don't think any of them think they can play with them, and for good reason. I mean, they're really, really good wide receivers, one of the best receiver groups in the country. And so I'm really curious to see, you know, what this wide receiver group does against maybe the best secondary of the country. I mean, they've certainly got a case for it. And I think at the very least, LSU is going to get in their face. They're going to play man coverage, and they're going to really challenge these guys in a way they haven't been yet. So to me, that's the matchup I'm most interested in seeing. And I think that's the matchup probably that NFL scouts are most interested in seeing too. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that group.
Barton, we see Alabama on a weekly basis on a national scale. Is there an underrated part of their team?
You know, it's interesting. I think because this is such a unique Alabama team. I think the thing that no one's talking about is maybe the offensive line, and in particular, you know, Jonah Williams and Jedrick Wills at offensive tackle have been awesome. I mean, those guys are, I mean, I think when you look at Tua, I mean, he can extend and he can break a tackle in the backfield and use his legs, but so often he's getting plenty of time thanks to those two guys. And so I think that's, if you're talking an underrated part of this unit, it's them. I think the running back group is as good as there is in college football too. We just don't talk about them because the pass game has taken up so much of our attention. And maybe this is a game where we see them kind of have their breakout because they may have to a little bit more. But all that said, you know, this is a very different Alabama team. And on the flip side too, in that this is the worst Alabama defense Nick Saban has had since his first year there. They're not as deep. They don't have the bodies behind the starters. It's just a, and frankly, even the starters and the secondary is not quite as experienced. So this is the year to exploit Alabama defensively. The problem is this is an Alabama offense, the likes of which they've never come close to based on the past game and Tua and all the talent they've accumulated. So that's what makes this matchup really interesting. That's what makes this team really interesting. It's nothing like the Alabama teams we're used to seeing.
And that's where I have an issue believing that LSU is going to keep this thing close, Barton, is that I don't know that they have the offense that can exploit this Bama defense. When you look at them with Joe Burrow on offense, do they have enough to get enough in this game where this could be a four-quarter game?
Well, I think Joe Burrow's got to play above himself a little bit. I mean, Joe Burrow came to LSU, and I think the expectations, look, I kind of called him, and the expectation was sort of a souped-up Danny Etling. And he's been that, I guess, to the extent that he's taken care of the football. He's made plays when they needed him to. But the souped-up part is, you know, that's questionable. I don't know if he's really been a souped-up version of Danny Etling or if he's just been Danny Etling with an offense that's a little bit more diverse and a defense that's really played well. And so I do think Joe Burrow has to be a guy that comes into this game and is not wide-eyed and really makes some plays, gives his wide receivers an opportunity to make some big plays. Because I do think that when you're looking at, you know, the ways to beat Alabama defensively, you got to be able to find big plays in the pass game. You have to be able to hit on 50-50 footballs. And LSU's got some wide receivers, some big bodies, a deep group, where they can do that. So I'm going back and forth on this in terms of what the game looks like. I think Alabama wins, but this is a pretty historic line. Top five team catching 14.5, 15 points at home at that. I still do tend to lean towards LSU because of that defense, because Alabama is a little more vulnerable defensively, and LSU could potentially just sort of play a little bit of keep away, shorten the game a little bit. I tend to think maybe they can keep this thing close, just under 14, but it is scary as hell to pick against Alabama.
So a week ago, Barton, it looked like Kentucky's good fortune had run out in Columbia, Missouri, and they got a huge break late with a pass interference call. They had a punt return for a touchdown. A lot of things broke right for them to escape that game with a win. They host Georgia, 2:30 CBS game this week. I feel like Georgia is going to manhandle Kentucky in this game, and their luck will officially be done this weekend. What do you think about the matchup? What do you think happens in this one?
Yeah, I mean, I hear where you're coming from, and honestly, to start the week, I thought the same thing. I mean, but haven't we been thinking this all season about Kentucky? I mean, they've been playing on this, quote, luck all year, and they keep on winning. And as this game approaches, this is another one where I'm starting to think this is just too big of a line. 9 points for a team in Kentucky that does an unbelievable job of playing to their strengths. They have proven that they can limit possessions, shorten games, take care of the football. And, the thing about that Missouri team, look, that's an offense that can score a lot of points. That's an offense, and I know they've had some issues here and there against, big-time opponents, but they moved the ball against Georgia. I mean, if not for some turnovers, that game was very much in doubt. And Missouri was able to move the ball. They couldn't move the ball against Kentucky. And now this Kentucky defense, I think, is all the way real. I think they're so legit. And all those jump balls that Georgia was throwing and sort of touchdown back shoulder fades against Florida last week, I mean, good luck this week doing it against a bunch of 6'3 cornerbacks that Kentucky's got. I mean, they are loaded on defense. And, another factor that I kind of keep in mind here is that people are sort of looking at that Missouri game and saying, well, there you go, they should have lost. Well, Missouri, that defensive line, no one realizes this and no one's talking about it, but that defensive front is one of the best in the country. They're one of the best in the SEC. They're better than Georgia's. And that sounds crazy to say it, but Missouri's defensive front is better against the run than Georgia's. They're more stout. And I think Kentucky's going to have a little more success in the run game against Georgia than they did against Missouri. Now, all this to say, I still think Georgia wins, but I think at home, this is the biggest game in Kentucky history. And I don't even think it's questionable. I mean, maybe back in the Bear Bryant days, there was a big game that outdates us all. But I think this is the atmosphere is going to be there at night, and Kentucky, it's one of those teams. I'm a little bit tired of just coming up with reasons why they're going to lose. I think they might just be that good on defense and know their identity enough offensively to where they can figure out a way to keep this thing close and keep it four quarters. And hey, if you got this team in the fourth quarter within striking distance, they sure do find a way to figure it out.
The Wake Up Zone, midday 180, 3HL, and now the Big Six, nonstop sports talk. Every weekday from 6 a.m. till 7 p.m., 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Barton Simmons with us from 24/7 Sports, also CBSSports.com.
So, Barton, we don't have to get into the whole thing, but what a mess at Maryland right now with the decision that came down yesterday to eventually fire DJ Durkin. What should be next for that Maryland program? If you're looking out there, something they should try to attempt to hire someone or what they should do, how would you go about this if you were Maryland?
Well, it's such a weird deal now because, first of all, who's even hiring the guy? I mean, Damon Evans isn't out of the woods yet, I don't think, the athletic director. Which board members and trustees and donors have lost a little clout based on whatever their stance was on the DJ Durkin stuff. I mean, it's just hard to really know who's making the decisions. And so I think when you look at this thing, eventually, it's not about finding someone that's got the right offense, or it's not about finding someone that's the right defense, or even recruiting Maryland. It's about someone that you can trust to instill and institute a really good culture, because that obviously is sort of what was at issue. And obviously a kid's death. And so you got to find someone that's going to kind of galvanize the fan base, and bring the team together, I think, as much as anything. And so when I look at this, I mean, first of all, the name that kind of pops in my mind, one that I think would be interesting, and again, these are not names that I'm hearing necessarily yet. I think everyone's guessing right now because of all those things I just talked about in terms of who's even making the hire. But I would be curious if they take a look at Tony Elliott, who's the co-offensive coordinator at Clemson, who has as good of a reputation as a person as you're going to find, who comes from, obviously from the offensive side of the ball. Clemson's been incredible. And he comes from a program in Clemson that has the culture that everybody wants. And so that's a name I think would be intriguing. And he's young. He's like 38 years old. I just think he would be a guy that's interesting. But on the flip side, maybe he's too young. Maybe he's not ready to deal with all that's going to come with this job. And there's a lot that's going to come with it. So how about Lance Leopold? He's at Buffalo. He was at Wisconsin Whitewater, D3, where he won 100 games in 106 tries to start his career. Was an outside-the-box hire at Buffalo, where he has quickly and steadily built that program into the class of the MAC right now. And that's the type of guy, he would come in and you would just sort of trust that things would be handled appropriately and the program would be run efficiently and effectively. And so those are two of just sort of my names. If I'm an AD, I'm calling. I think a couple of the names that you could maybe look at pop up would be Mike Locksley, who is sort of an obvious candidate in the sense that he is from Maryland, incredible recruiter in that area, offensive coordinator at Alabama, which is putting together a historic season on offense. Problem there is, and he obviously has history coaching in Maryland, problem there is he had a horrible stint at New Mexico that had drama and controversy and scandal, and so I don't know that he could get past that for this job, given the timing. The other one I'd be curious about is Mike Leach. Wanted to get out of town, as you all well know, to Tennessee last year.
We had the text message records to prove it also, that he wanted out.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt he's willing to talk. And I'm told that Kevin Plank, of Under Armour, is a huge Mike Leach fan, really believes in him, and was very, Mike Leach almost got this job 10 years ago. And so I think that's a name to keep an eye on as well.
Would it be tough, though, Barton, with Mike Leach, with the history with Craig James' son, with some of the rants post-game that are, that's viral at this point? If you're coming from that situation with Maryland, would that be a tough sell for people out there based on that?
Right. I think you got to figure out if you think that the Craig James stuff is viable. And I think there's a lot of back and forth on that, on whether or not, I mean, Craig James turned out to be a little bit of a clown through that whole situation. So absolutely. I think you got to figure out how legit that stuff was. But to your point, Chad, that's absolutely something that you got to think is going to be looked at really closely. I think the other stuff, the zaniness of Mike Leach, you just decide whether you're okay with that and understand that he is proven and successful winning football games everywhere he's ever been. And just, you don't even interview him. Just don't even ask him to interview. Just decide whether, you know what you're getting in Mike Leach. Just decide whether that's what you want or not. And I get that it's not really palatable for a lot of folks. So, you know, for that reason, I think it's a really just sort of interesting hire or interesting candidate, and whether how legit it even is.
So one name I want to throw at you, and I feel like I'm this guy's agent because I'm pitching him for every Power 5 job that traditionally does not win. But if you want to go character route, someone who does things the right way, go get the head coach at West Point, talking about doing things the right way. Jeff Monken would be a guy that I would talk to. Now, we talked to John Feinstein on this show, who knows him, and he says he doesn't know that he would take that job, doesn't know that he would leave Army for the Maryland job. But what about a guy like that, that also runs a system that would be very different from everyone else in the Big Ten?
Look, it's an interesting discussion, and because I think you make a good point in that you're playing the Big Ten East, and you're never going to out-recruit the rest of the Big Ten East. You're never going to out-recruit the Penn States, the Michigans, the Ohio State. So find something that is different, and perhaps that's your angle. But I'll counter with a different guy. What about Ken Niumatalolo, who's right down the road in Annapolis, who is another guy with an unbelievable reputation as a person, as a program builder,
I don't even think of him as an option because he's turned down opportunities at other jobs. But that would be great. Sign me up for him first if you could go hire him at Maryland.
He had Arizona last year, so it seems as though he's more open to it than he's been in the past. Now, obviously, it's got to be the right fit for him, and he's going to be very selective. But given the location, given how, you know, his background there, and given that he was open to moving and leaving last year, you know, it certainly makes sense to try to make a run at him, and I think he'd be a home run.
Barton, real quick, because I know you got to run here in about 90 seconds. Michigan, Penn State this weekend. What do you think of the matchup between those two?
Look, I think Michigan's probably a lot better than Penn State, and I think Michigan seems to be sort of on a mission this year. That said, look, I mean, Penn State's lost the last five losses, and we date back to, you know, September 24th, 2016. That's when Michigan blew them out, 49-10 or whatever it was, and that's when Brent Pry took over the DC job. That's when Joe Moorhead was hired, and they started turning the corner. And since that loss, Penn State's lost five times over the last, what is it, two and a half years, 12 combined points in those five losses. So they just don't, under James Franklin, really, they don't get blown out. They you know, if they're going to lose, it's going to be close. So if Penn State can keep this thing close, I do think Trace McSorley is good enough to make some plays. Again, I think Michigan wins, but you know, I think Penn State's not really to be trusted as someone that's going to go down without a fight. I think it's going to be an interesting game. But I just think that Penn State or that Michigan defense they're the best in the country right now. And I think that they'll prove it again and probably figure out a way to get a win there.
Barton, keep up the great work, man. And let's catch up soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks, y'all.